bringing the stories of people just like us directly into your home and learning more about them. This is Trent Speaks. Today I'm talking to someone who I've known for quite a few years. I've met this individual a few times in my lifetime. And this individual actually used to work with my mom at the airport. And so I think it goes to show connections and the ability of social media to help you stay in touch with people, which is something I've talked about previously. This person has entertained many celebrities. They've been on TV such as ABC, Fox, NBC, and you can find them online at, is it destroyillusions.com, Tom?
DestroyIllusionsTour.com.
DestroyIllusionsTour.com. Perfect. And so with that, I welcome in Tom Coverly, the Illusionist. How are you doing today, Tom?
Man, I am doing great, Trent. Thanks so much for having me on. And I'm doing well because I can't complain. I'm down here right now in Gulf Shores, Alabama, enjoying some sunshine and 65 degrees here already in the morning, man. So it's feeling good.
Well, I'm glad one of us is enjoying sunshine while one of us is enjoying a fresh coat of snow. So, Tom.
Yeah, I'll play with the sand shovel today while you have the snow shovel. How about that?
Oh, yeah, the fun stuff. Tom, how did you get into magic? I know my mom used to tell me all the time when she'd come home from work about some of the cool tricks that you would do and show some of your fellow coworkers and stuff at the airport. And now you tour the country performing magic for different audiences and different crowds. Talk to me about how you got into magic.
Yeah, man, it was 18 years old. As a child, I didn't have a love for magic tricks. I don't think any more than any other kid, you know, maybe a card trick here or there as a kid, but I don't remember having this fascination with doing magic tricks or anything like that. It wasn't until I was in college and down the street in Scranton, Pennsylvania, there was a magic shop called Mel's Magic City, owned by a friend of mine called Paul Mellon, now a friend of mine. And Paul, basically, man, I walked in there. And the only reason I was introduced to actually going in there, just to back up a little bit, was there was a professor of mine in college who did some magic tricks. And I'm like, man, this is really cool. And then I ran into, you know, it was beginning of my freshman year, and I met this student who did some magic tricks. And those two kept telling me about this magic shop. So I went down to the magic shop, and this guy, Paul, behind the counter, man, was showing me a couple little magic tricks. And I always say that there's a couple different kinds of people when you watch magic, right? Either you can watch it and just be amazed. Like, you don't really want to know how it's done, even though you know it's a trick. You don't care. Like, you just want to enjoy the trick, right?
Exactly.
And then there's the people that want to figure it out, man. You have to know how it's done. And that was me. He showed me this trick, and I couldn't just enjoy it. I needed to know how it was done. Well, like any magic shop in the country, you want to know the secret, you pay for the trick. And so I started paying for some of these magic tricks and learning some of these beginner magic tricks. And so before you know, man, it was buying $5 magic tricks. Then it was $50 magic tricks. I'm getting a little more advanced. Then years later, I'm buying $500 stage illusions. And then years later, as I began doing it professionally, I was doing $5,000 illusions, you know, and buying, and so a lot of money wrapped up into it. But it was a hobby, actually, for just a lot of years, just something I enjoyed doing. Excuse me. I enjoyed doing it. And occasionally during Bible college, when I was there, I would do some tricks on the side for like little kid birthday parties and stuff like that as a way of making a little bit of extra money. And that's about it, bro.
So how did this tour begin? How did you begin traveling the country? And what is it that you share with people in this tour?
Yeah, we are celebrating 11 years in January. This January, we'll be celebrating 11 years that I've been doing this.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's just been incredible. It blows me away, honestly, because it's just to think about the impact and things that have been happening. Go back to your question again, one more time.
Yeah, I guess, what is it that you talk about on the Destroy Illusions tour, and how did that all get started? How did the professional
side how did it all begin? That's where I was going with that. So as far as how it all began, 11 years ago, there was a friend of mine at the time. I was a youth pastor, and I was doing that for about 13 years, and I just thought, man, like, we're called to go reach people, right? And I'm like, the people that we're called to reach, a lot of times they're not, like, busting down the doors anytime soon to come into the church. So how can I just go out and reach young people where they are? And so I asked a few friends of mine to just be praying about things that maybe I could do. And so a friend of mine came back and he said, man, you're like a gifted speaker. Like, that's one of your gifts, man. Like, you're an incredible speaker. And he said, and then you always had, his exact words, he goes, you always had this stupid talent doing magic tricks. and he said, have you ever thought about combining the two together, man, for a nonprofit ministry? And I said, man, I don't know. Sounds like a corny idea. I had all the excuses, right? I was like, there's better magicians out there who have more money wrapped up in magic. There's better speakers out there. And I'm like, man, I just don't know. And he said, I encourage you to put together a website and watch what happens. Start with your connections around the country, of people that you know around the country. And it was unbelievable, man. In the first year, I was in 38 states.
Wow.
Speaking in person, man. And that is not to pat me on the back. I honestly give all credit to God for that. And he enabled and used that job, even working at the airport there with your mom, just because I was able to fly, right, for next to nothing around the country, free a lot of times, around the country using that job because I only worked there part-time and I was able to give away a lot of my shifts so that I could pour in my passion and my love of what I really love doing. The airport was a means of helping me be able to fly, providing a little bit of extra money, and as I was launching this, and help with health insurance and stuff like that. So it was a good deal. So it enabled me, man, to just get around the country and do this tour. And we haven't looked back since. In the last decade, I have now done this show for 3 million people around the world, just about every U.S. state except for 3 or 4 states. And then Hong Kong, Vietnam, China, Malaysia, Canada, Mexico. So we've just been all over the place, man, just using this show as a way of just even making impact in people's lives. To me, that's what it's all about.
What is it that shaped the message or the story that you share on stage?
Yeah, I mean, it's twofold. Because I do this as a nonprofit ministry, it's twofold. So I do a lot of faith-based events, and I do school assemblies. And I respect the whole separation of church and state. And so when I'm in my school assemblies and I'm doing those events, there is zero mention or any hint from the faith aspect. So it's when I'm doing the ministry events, I'm doing a lot of the big Christian music festivals around the country. I mean, those range anywhere from 10,000 people to, there could be 100,000 people in a crowd. And then I'll do a show there for those events. I'm doing my show and I'm entertaining. I'm having people laugh. And at the end of the show, it gives me a chance to just say, look, everything you just saw is an illusion. Let me share something that's real. Let me share how Jesus Christ has changed my life. And so it gives me a chance to just share my story. I don't get super preachy in my message, but it gives me a chance to just, my prayer is always that people will be more blown away by who my great God is rather than a dumb magic trick that they just saw on stage. And so, so that's the faith aspect of it, of the school assemblies. The message is anti-bullying, suicide prevention, character, integrity, respect is the main thing that we go after. Our school assemblies become one of the most requested assemblies in the entire nation for middle school and high school students. And it's an anti-bullying assembly at heart. And we're probably one of the only school assemblies like that that doesn't even mention the word bullying. I don't even talk about the word bullying in my school assembly. Because a lot of times that word's been tossed around in so many different, you know, definitions, what people would define bullying. And so I decided to steer away from that word and hit the root cause of what is happening among our students. And so I hit the root issue of what it's about. When you hit the root issue, I think it's about respecting yourself. It's about respecting others. And so that's why the word respect is something that we talk about a lot during our school assembly.
You know, I always have like three or four questions that come up sometimes when people are talking, so I have to figure out what route to take. But since you were just talking about the school assemblies, I know a few months ago now, or maybe even longer than that, it all blends together. You started the Buy Things, Change Things kind of movement to raise awareness of youth bullying and youth suicide. I guess, how did that all come together?
Man, it's been just one of those things that came across my mind one day. And I'm always trying to generate ways as a nonprofit that I don't seek a whole lot of donation support. I mean, we have a few people that donate monthly, and obviously that is helpful. But I'm really bad. Like, just the other day was Giving Tuesday, right? So we got Black Friday, you know, we got Cyber Monday, and now nationwide it's been known as Giving Tuesday, where nonprofits and things like that, people trying to raise money for good causes, or trying to ask for donations. And it's actually one of my least favorite things to do, man. I have a hard time asking people for money to help support this so that we can go out and do this, because it's not about money for us. Yeah, we got bills to provide and things like that, but for the most part, our heart and passion is to reach students. And so obviously monthly donations would be helpful. So I just thought one of the ways that I could do that came across my ideas by selling t-shirts surrounded around the word kindness and respect. And so I thought, man, it's hard to market kindness, right? It's as far as from a marketing standpoint on social media ads and things like that. So I thought, man, I got to tie in all the things that people love, right? About their dogs. People love their coffee. People love chocolate. People love bacon. So I started putting that, you know, kindness and tied in with those kind of things. And so I can then market dog lovers. I can market chocolate lovers, and I can market people that love bacon or whatever it might be, exercise. And so music, dance. So all these different t-shirts tie in with, yeah, that love you might have for your pet or a food or whatever it might be, but it's tied into a greater cause. And so I thought, man, this would be a great way, sell t-shirts. And instead of giving a portion or things like that, I mean, we are donating 100% of those proceeds to be able to go towards a handful of times a year. I will get asked from schools, they will call and they will say, man, we just experienced a suicide. There's a student that was sitting in a chair yesterday, and today they're not in that chair. And will you come? And, man, it makes me get teary-eyed every time I think of it, because these schools, when they call, and they're like, man, we want you to come. And they already know. I'm like, I don't mess around. Our prices, our rates for school assemblies are right on the website, and I keep those the same. And that's what helps generate this going, you know, this ministry and nonprofit going, is I'm going out, man, and I'm just doing school assemblies, and we typically charge for those assemblies. And so that's what keeps this nonprofit rolling. And so in those cases, Trent, I have always wanted to just bless them, you know, bless that school in a way that says, man, we're coming for free. It's not going to cost you anything. And the responses are amazing. Like when you call and they're like, they're already hurting, right? They have a student. They got to learn now how to deal with the student body of the student that took their life and how they're going to handle this in the school. And the fact that they know that there's an assembly coming in, they don't even have to pay for travel. They don't have to pay for anything. I'm coming and I'm doing that school assembly at no cost. And so that I can come there and just encourage their student body. It's been incredible, man. And so I want to continue to do that. We get asked about 5-6 times a year from different schools. There was one year, just a year or two ago, that we had in a 2.5-week period, man. I don't know what was going on across the country during this particular time, but I got contacted about 20 suicides or so.
Wow.
In a matter of 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
Man, I've never cried so much in my life during that couple weeks, man. My heart was just broken for our youth and our nation, man, who are just, they're struggling, man. And so, bro, at that time, we didn't have the money to do all of them. We were able to do as many as we could. I took some money out of our own pockets and just trying to just fly and drive, fly, whatever it takes. So that's what some of that money goes towards for us to be able to get there. And we take the cheapest route, man. I spend our nonprofits money like I would spend my own money, man. So if it means a cheap hotel, if it means flying or driving rather than flying, you know, whatever it takes for us to get there. So those expenses help us cover that. And so that's what we've been doing, to be able to say yes to those schools. Now, every year it seems like we get just enough money in to cover the schools that ask and say, man, we're hurting, and will you come? We just experienced a suicide. So that's primarily been my goal on how to spend those donor dollars, people who want to partner with us in that. My dream, man, would be to raise even more money, because we get contacted by schools who are in low-income areas and cities and saying, man, we just don't get the scholarship money like other schools can get, and we have a hard time getting some of these grants and things like that. And I want to be able to raise enough money, man, so that when we get contacted by these low-income schools, that we can say, man, we're coming, and they apply for like this scholarship that we can set up, and we can, based on their need, we can either offer a low cost or even better yet, a no cost to them assembly for these low income areas. That's my dream, man. That would be incredible, right? It just, the almighty dollar isn't always there, man, right? And, I wish, man, that some way that I could provide. I wish I didn't have to charge any school for any assembly. I guess that would be my ultimate dream. I just have a hard time doing it. But like I said, it you got to be able to get there, right? And I don't have the resources to happen, so that's why we do the school assemblies, to raise money, and it just keeps funneling in itself and keeps it rolling so that we can impact schools.
Well, and I'm proud to be a supporter of the Buy Things, Change Things movement. And so I'll continue to promote it on the podcast week in and week out as much as I can. And now I have some t-shirts that I can offer as giveaways. So there may be things to come for that for the listeners as well. Tom, so I know...
BuyThingsChangeThings.com would be that website for them to check out.
Perfect. So I know that you had mentioned a little bit earlier when you were talking about the Destroy Illusions tour, how you share your story and how that's not an illusion. Obviously, I'm not trying to get you to share your entire story here, but what is a condensed down version of your story? How is it that you went from young Tom to where you are now?
Well, I grew up in a city called Camden, New Jersey, and anyone who's been there that is not known as one of the nicest cities in America. It's actually known as one of the roughest cities in America. It's located right outside of Philadelphia. If you were to cross over the Benjamin Franklin Bridge, going from Philly into Jersey, that would be the city you would come into. And it's on the top five list of the worst cities in America. And it has been for a lot of years. It is today, and it's been like that for a long, long time. That's where I grew up. And, you know, my dad, even at a young age, wanted to teach us just how to defend ourselves. He never wanted us to start a fight, but he always wanted us to know how to defend ourselves and fight. And so it just, it was even in that young age, just, it was different, man, living there. And then we moved outside the city for a little bit, just about 15, 20 minutes outside the city, to a town called Berlin, New Jersey. And we lived there. I was the kind of kid, man, that was bullied, and I bullied, you know? And I think that's actually, if most people think about it, we're all like that to some point, where we've been bullied and we bullied a little bit. Because I'm a firm believer that hurting people hurt people. When you're hurting, you want to hurt someone else, right? That's quote unquote a little less inferior than you, and so when we're hurting, we're going through a hard time, we always kind of find someone else to, you know, put that pain on to. And that's the case. If you talk to a lot of bullies, man, and as I travel across the country, I'm finding that, you know, if when I have these one-on-one conversations, because I'll have students that'll come up and they'll say, even though I didn't address the bully during the assembly, they will come up and they're going, man, I'm the kid that's hurting people. I'm the kid that's been ragging on people and making people feel horrible about themselves. And when I dig into their story a little bit, I find out real quick that there's some hurt there, you know? And because they're going through hurt, they want to hurt someone else. Then it's this vicious cycle. So getting back to my story, I bullied because I was bullied. And so that's always rung in the back of my mind. When I started doing school assemblies, I thought, man, I relate to this. Even suicide prevention, you know, when I talk about suicide, it's one of those things, man. There's a period about a dozen years ago. You know, I was the kind of person that even when I was a youth pastor, I was pouring into the kids who, whatever area of life they were going through or whatever hurt or trial or pain they were going through, I was walking with them through it. Walked through many kids going through considering taking their life, including, I'll never forget when I was a youth pastor, I had a student, I'll never forget that call, and said that he took his life. And there's a lot of memories associated with that. Not to get real graphic, but it was a small little town. They didn't have a team to clean up the mess. And so he shot himself. And I remember the senior pastor and I cleaning up that room. So the parents didn't have to. And so those memories I'll never forget. I always walked with people through that, the young people. And I can never relate or understand truly what they were going through. I thought, how bad could life ever get that you would consider taking your life? I always thought that when I was walking with young people through that. Until a dozen years or so ago, I was going through a rough time in my own life. And it just felt like my world collapsed out from under me. And I attempted to take my life twice. And without getting into a lot of those details, it's one of those things, once I got past that, and I haven't had any of those thoughts since that, the 12 years, I think it was just, like a lot of people, when you go through a dark time, all you see, I compare it to, take a door, like an old door that has the, you know, keyhole through it, where you take that big old key, and you put it through that keyhole, and you turn it, and you can see right through that keyhole into the room. I picture, like, when you're going through a hard time, you're looking through that keyhole, and when you look through that keyhole in that door, all you can see in the room is what's straight ahead of you, right? There might be a bed that's straight ahead in that bedroom, or a chair sitting in a, up against the wall, but you can't see the entire room. And when myself or others who have considered giving up on life, the gift of life, I think a lot of times all we see is the problem that's ahead of us. We see the heartache, the pain that we're going through, and we don't see any other option, right? We don't see the people that love us. We don't see, we can't see the entire room. You can't see anything else in that room, and it's not until you open that door. And when you open the door, now you can see the entire room. You can see other pieces of furniture in that room, whatever it might be, right? Now you can see the window. Now you can see outside. And a lot of times it's not until we're going through that hard time that we open the door to our heart and to our mind. And sometimes it takes others coming along our side to remind us that there are people that love us. There are people that care about you. There are people that would miss you. You do have a purpose in this life. Because, friend, these are all the lies that people believe when they are ready to give up. They believe that they are not loved. They are not cared about. No one would miss them. Their problem, their situation will never get better. They are the lies, the illusions that they are believing. And it gives me a chance in these assemblies to talk about truth and reality is. Truth and reality is when you open that door, there are people that care about you and that love you. So that is a little bit of my story of why I began doing what I'm doing. There's different pieces in my life, not just from childhood, from, as I just mentioned, adult. You know, I'm 45 years old now, and so 12 years ago, there was a time, rough point in my life where I wanted to give up, man, and I was believing those illusions and lies. That no one would miss me, no one would care if I was gone. And obviously that's not truth, right? We all have gone through rough times in our life where it seems like it's just never going to get better. And we can all give examples in our life of we look back and we go, all right, it did get better. It, you know, or maybe the situation didn't get better, but it did improve in some ways. And I did get past it. And we always will. We will always get past those things. We will always rise above it. Even if that situation doesn't necessarily get better, there are times that we look back and we go, man, am I glad I didn't give up? Because I did make it past that. I did rise above that situation.
Yeah, and I've shared that on the podcast before, too, that, you know, I was in a place a few years ago now where I was having suicidal thoughts and everything. I've been going through severe depression and stuff. And I've shared that. But I think that that analogy that you gave about the door and everything is perfect and spot on. And yeah, you're right. You do look back on that stuff and then you look forward and you're like, wow, look at what I've accomplished. Look at from where I've come to where I am now. And I'm doing a whole lot better. So,
Oh, man, absolutely. Yeah, it's I actually there was a community that was experiencing a lot of suicides in a short period of time. They had 5 suicides in less than 6 months.
Wow.
In one community of one school, small little school in Sagertown, Pennsylvania. And actually, they said, well, you come, Tom. We need you to come. So we set it up for me to come out there, and it was going to be an evening event. I actually wasn't even going to do a school assembly. They were inviting all the students, all of the parents, the community to come back in the evening or to come in the evening time. And so, man, it was a standing room only event. I think just about the entire community was squeezed into this auditorium. And I did my show because they said, man, we want to laugh. Like, we're hurting. We just need to laugh. But we also need to be encouraged. And we need hope offered to this community. And so I came. And just before I got there, 2 weeks before I got there, the father of one of the fathers who lost their son to suicide, the dad took the same gun that his son shot himself with, and the dad shot himself. So now there were 6 suicides in less than 6 months. So I'll never forget, man, when I got there, and there was this older couple that came up to me, and they threw their arms around me, and they were just sobbing, man, after the show. And they just could not stop thanking me, and they said, we lost our son, and our grandson within 2 weeks. So thank you so much for coming and impacting our community, and how beneficial that was to the community. And but going back, that's one of the times that I asked them if they could put a door on wheels, an old door with the keyhole, and I did that whole illustration analogy with them so that they could physically see that, and they could physically see me looking through the holes so that I can only see the people in the first few rows, right, or what was straight down the middle aisle even of the auditorium. And it wasn't until I walked through that door that I see all the other people in the auditorium and all the truths and realities, you know, that there are others in this room that cared about you, but all I saw was the problem straight ahead of me. So there was something so powerful about seeing that door. Man, I wish I had something I can travel with me and put on an airplane or at least have schools or whatever set it up for each time. And it takes obviously a little bit of work to make that happen, but it is something, man, I wish I could present all the time rather than just talk about it, because there is something, you know, we live in a world that is very, we're visual learners, and so to be able to see it for themselves right in front of them, I think it just comes to life a whole lot more.
Tom, do you have time for about 5 or 6 more questions?
Let's do it.
All right. Hey, what is it, Tom, that empowers you or keeps you motivated? Obviously, you can tell just from talking with you in the last 30 minutes or so, this is something that you're very passionate about. What is it that continues to drive you through all this?
Man, it's not a contrite, or it's not this answer that, this cheese ball answer that I think, you know, that I just say. I truly mean it with everything that is in me. It is my God, man. It is my faith. It's, you know, as I said, I don't share any of that in the schools. But it's one of those things, that's what drives me. There are times, Trent, that I want to just give up, you know. And I don't mean give up on life. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just give up on doing this, because it's tough, man. It's tough in a lot of ways, because it's, you know, you're on the road a lot. For example, this fall, we did 107 school assemblies in 2 months. I mean, try to break that down per day of
holy cow.
How many we were doing. It's a lot. That was the most I've ever done in a short period of time like that. And that was spread out over 6 different states and 12 different flights, a lot of rental cars, even a lot of driving. I mean, if we weren't traveling, we were doing school assemblies. Sleep was barely an option, because we would travel, get to a place, and wake up that morning and get to the school, knock out, you know, 5 and 6 school assemblies a day sometimes. Some days, light days, were maybe 3 and 4 school assemblies a day. It was a lot, man. But what drives me is the fact that I really believe, you know, I believe we all have a calling in this life. Whether someone believes in God or not that's listening to your podcast, you know, we all know this. We're all on this earth. And there's a purpose that's greater than just about me and you, right? There's a purpose that's greater than just serving myself. And so you don't have to be faith driven or have a relationship with God to be able to, I think that, you know, I think that most people, if they think about why they're here on this earth, that no one wants to live selfishly. I mean, maybe we do a little bit, right? But for the most part, we realize there's a purpose for us in our life, right? And so if we have this purpose, and for me, that purpose comes because I feel truly that's what God has called me to do. He's called me my life. When my life is done, man, I want people to look back and go, you know what? That Tom Coverley guy, He sure didn't have life all figured out. He was a mess, man, you know, because I'm not in this, you know, I don't do this life perfectly, but I do know this. I want people to look and say, man, this guy loved God. And because he had such a love for God, he wanted to serve people, man. Like, his life was about wanting to see other people just to improve in their life and just be better. And he wanted to help the hurting, those that were hurting, those that people cast to the side, that they're the people that he went after. And to answer your question, man, it's my faith that drives me, because it's one of those things when I know that that's what my God called me to, that's what keeps me going. During those times, I feel like, oh, man, this is hard. Traveling, you know, it's not all what people think, man. You get to travel around the world. You get to see so much. Yeah, that's great, and that is awesome, and I get to meet a lot of cool people, but that gets tiring, you know. I'd much rather be home sometimes, you know, and enjoy home. Now, I am blessed that my family gets to travel with me. My wife and my 6-year-old daughter, they travel with me. I have two older children, and they are grown and doing their own thing. They're off in my daughter's off in college, and my son's at Aviation Academy, and so they're doing their own thing. They're 20 and 18 years old, so my daughter gets to travel with me. And so what motivates me, man, is just that, because it's who my God is and what he's called me to do. Because even from the financial standpoint, like I said, we're not in this to be rich. I choose a lot of other jobs in this world besides being a motivational speaker. I do it because it's my calling. And so there's times I'm tempted to give up. I get this gentle nudge from God saying, man, this is what I called you to do. Keep going. Keep going. I will provide. I will walk with you through this.
And you're always very open about that, especially on your social media. I know a couple of months ago, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you've been praying a lot about this move that you made to Alabama, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So why Alabama, out of everywhere you could have gone, why Alabama? What pushed you there?
Yeah, I am. Well, the beauty, I guess, of everything I just said, let me just say the beauty of getting to be on the road where you're living 9 months out of your year, because, you know, on average, we travel 9 months out of the year, and then there's a few months that we're home. And during that 9 months, there might be, you know, a week here, or maybe even most 2 weeks at a time that we're home. But for the most part, those 9 months out of the year, we're traveling. We can make home anywhere, you know. It doesn't have to be in the cold state of Michigan where I was before. And I'm grateful for my years in Michigan. I grew up in New Jersey, then moved to Michigan, and I lived there for about 18 years. But my wife grew up there her whole life. And so it's cold, man. I don't have to tell you. You're in Wisconsin, right?
I am. I am indeed. You want that sand shovel. So, that's why.
Yeah, that's it, man. I don't have to tell you about cold and snow. And I know there are people that love it and they wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. I despise it, man. I think it is horrible. I just don't enjoy snow. Actually, I don't enjoy it. I don't care about the snow as much. It's the cold, man.
Yeah.
I don't do well with the cold, even physically with my body and stuff like that. Some health issues that I deal with. You know, the warmth is needed. Even my doctor said this would be incredible for you to be down there. So when we're not traveling, we wanted to be where it's warm. That's what it came down to. For years, I always wanted to move to Nashville. I always wanted to be where a lot of my friends are. I have friends all around the country, but a majority of the people that are doing what I'm doing, as far as not just magicians, but a lot of musicians that people listen to on the radio, like that's where all my friends are, down there in Nashville. And I build a lot of relationships with people who are quote unquote entertainers and motivational speakers. And a lot of them live there, and I always wanted to move there. And we were actually coming through the Gulf Shores, Perdido, Key area in Florida. And as we were going over that bridge, my wife and I just both looked at each other. We're like, you thinking what I'm thinking? And we both, like, talked about it. We're like, why don't we move here? Like, this is just beautiful. This is gorgeous. Why go to Nashville? like Nashville is an 8-hour drive up the road, so we can do that anytime, like when we're traveling. So why don't we go, because we're both beach lovers, right? I grew up by the ocean in New Jersey, not too far away anyway. And so I always loved the ocean. And so to be near the Gulf here, the Gulf of Mexico, it's just beautiful, man, just gorgeous. And so we actually talked about it, and we were like, we're going to move next summer, summer of 2019. And we just moved here the end of August of 2018. And a lot of things happened, man, without getting into a long story, just a lot of things that fell into place. Where it was like almost God nudging, like, you guys are going to move now. And I'm going to set up some of these things so that you can move down there now. And so we did, man. We were like, all right, God, you're going to have to supply a place down there. It's hard to look for a place when you're living in Michigan and,
right,
you know, 1,000 miles away. So how's that going to happen? And God just supplied this place for us down here. That we can just rent right now and just enjoy down here. And so he opened it up, and actually a week after that, it's a whole another long story, but it was like God just gave us a little glimpse of why he had us move down here to Gulf Shores, Alabama. I met this pastor in Missouri, of all things. This is a week after we decided to move, and this pastor asked why I want to move to Gulf Shores. Or no, he said, where are you from? And I said, Grand Rapids, but we're moving to Gulf Shores. And he's like, why would you want to move to Gulf Shores, you know? And he goes, this is crazy, man. And he threw his hands in the air, and he goes, you'll never guess, man. He goes, we were in the office, and there was another pastor sitting there. And he said, we were in the office, and God laid it on our hearts to plant churches in 5 cities. And we wrote them on the board. And he said, 4 of them are in the Missouri area. And he goes, and then God laid a 5th one on our heart. And he goes, the crazy thing is, I've never even been to this place, and it's Gulf Shores, Alabama. And I'm like, man, you're pulling my leg, you know? Stop kidding with me like that. And he goes, man, I'll take you down at the church office right now. So he takes me down there. And sure enough, on the board, number 5 churches that they want to plant was Gulf Shores, Alabama.
That gives me the chills.
And he goes, Tom, yeah, he goes, Tom, I've never even been there before, man. I know nothing about it. And I'm like, oh, I'm sure you already have your pastor lined up, right? I'm sure you already have your worship leader lined up. And he goes, no, actually, we're just going, God, we don't even know why you did that. How are we going to find pastors and worship leaders and to get this church rolling when we live far away? They're in Missouri near like Springfield area. So how are we going to plant a church that far away, God? But yet they were willing to listen. They put it on the board. And I mean, it's a long story. Even before that, a year before that, God laid it on my heart one day. This was a year prior. So this was 2017, that God laid it on my heart one day. And he's like, man, someday you're going to pastor again, Tom. And I'm like, God, no, you got that wrong, right? You know, not that I heard God's audible voice like, you're going to pastor someday, you know? It's not like that. It's like, you just, I mean, you're in your spirit as I was praying, just like, you know, just this, man, how do you describe the voice of God of just when you're praying, of just him just laying something on your heart, you know, and just like, you're going to move there someday to, or not move there, sorry, you're going to pastor someday. And I ignored it, man. I'll be honest. I was like, all right, God, that's a crazy idea. And you don't have it all figured out. You know, I'm trying to tell God of all people, like, yeah, this is a dumb idea, and because the Lord, you know, I don't want to do that. I was a youth pastor. I did senior pastor for a little bit at a couple different churches as an intern pastor, as they were on a search for a pastor. I'm like, I'm a little burnt out, Lord, from being on staff at a church. Like, that's not my thing anymore, you know, and so I ignored it. 2 or 3 weeks later, again, this is last year, 2 or 3 weeks later, my wife comes to me and she says, Tom, she says, God just been laying something on my heart lately, and I just want to share it with you that someday we're going to pastor a church together, and I'm going to lead worship. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Because I didn't want to tell Tiffany this, because I thought, if I tell her this, then she's going to hold me to it, man. That's what wives are good for doing, right? She's going to hold me to it. So I didn't want to tell her. I'm like, God, if you want to tell Tiffany, you're going to have to tell herself. And sure enough, he did. You know, he ended up telling her. And so I'm like, baby, I said, you know, God gets it wrong sometimes. You know? And I'm like, no, he really doesn't. But that was me just, my flesh speaking, right? I'm like, nah, no, maybe just someday. God didn't say when. So we kind of just laughed about it and just thought, God, we're open to whatever you want for our lives. And then here it is, man, a week later, after we decide to move, you know, when I meet this pastor this past summer, he's telling us that, hey, we want to plant a church in Gulf Shores. And I'm like, God, this is why even a year early, you set up things. We weren't planning on moving even until 2019, and you wanted us down here a year early for some reason. So that's the gist. Here I said in the beginning of this, right? I'm not going to get into a long story, and I get into it, but it's pretty crazy, man.
Like, it is.
It just, only God can do that, right? Of late, he spoke to me separately. He spoke to my wife, Tiffany. He spoke to this pastor in Missouri about Gulf Shores, a place he's never even visited. So who knows what kind of role we might have, you know, because that pastor was like, hey, who knows what God might do? You know, maybe you'll be pastoring. Maybe your wife will be leading worship. And I'm like, yeah, this is crazy. So who knows? That might be in store for, you know, down the road someday. Maybe not right away. Whatever God wants, man. That's our life. We're going, God, our life is not ours. I am blessed to live another day. And as long as this heart is beating, I want to live it for you. And yeah, I might think that certain plans are crazy, but I've always followed them through those doors. You know, if you picture a doorway, you know, and you have to walk through that doorway, and you ever, you know, we've all seen enough movies where like someone's grabbing onto the doorway and like kicking and screaming through the door, maybe a little kid. That's me sometimes when God asks me to do stuff. Like I'll go through it, but I'm kicking and screaming as I go through it. And then after I walk through that door, it's kind of like what I'm doing now, right? 11 years ago, I was kicking and screaming a little bit. I was like, all right, this is a little crazy plan, you know. And then I kicked and screamed, but I always walk through the door. I'll still get through it because I always want to obey what my God wants. And then when you look back, you go, you do, as scripture says, have a plan to prosper us and not to harm us. You do have our best interest in mind. And so you look back and then you go, why was I kicking and screaming? You know, why did I think that was a dumb plan? When your plan that you lay on our hearts is always for a reason, you know, there might be people listening to this podcast that, man, just that little still voice to go out of your way and do something for someone, or go out of your way and say something kind to that person. You know, we can be standing in line at a grocery store, and if we just look around, we can see some people that are hurting, right? We can see some people that need encouragement. And that little nudge, that little still small voice, I believe is God sometimes. It just says, man, go impact that person's life. And we can either go, man, I'm too busy, or I got to hurry up and get home, or we can listen to it. And then after we do, what happens a lot of times? We encourage that person, they're encouraged, and we walk away blessed and more encouraged because you watch their response going, man, they're blown away that you would have done that for them. And so it's always worth listening to the voice of God.
Tom, I mentioned at the top of the podcast that you've performed on national television. You've entertained many celebrities. I'm sure you always enjoy entertaining people, but celebrities is interesting to me. How did that come about, to entertain celebrities? And is there, I mean, I'm sure they were all fun, but is there one that you really enjoyed interacting with?
Yeah, I, man, It's never anything I seek out to do, and it kind of just fell into my lap a couple times. I mean, there's some people out in California and Hollywood. I don't like the name drop, but there are some people that I've performed for out there, and it just came about. And then Warner Brothers contacted me. That would probably be the most recent where Warner Brothers contacted and said, man, we're having, you know, the closing party, a wrap party, what they would call it, to wrap up the movie, Batman vs. Superman. And so they said, we have about 400 of the, you know, A-list actors that are in that movie. We have the producers and the, all the people that help make that movie happen. They said, will you come and entertain us? And so, man, that was a blast, man. Anybody watching that movie, they know some of the names that were there. Yeah. And so it's to be able to entertain them and stuff, it was cool, man. That was an event where I didn't do a show in front of people. I did a lot of close-up. So as they were mingling around in their little VIP sections or, you know, it was like a three-story building that we were in. And I had to sign a non-disclosure kind of thing that I wouldn't say about the party because I didn't want a bunch of paparazzi and people outside of this event center, you know, where this place was at, where they were having the party. And so I couldn't say nothing until after I was able to do it, which was exciting, man. So I was able to roam through. And so to have certain A-list actors say, man, hey, Tom, come on over here. Like, told me to do a trick and say, come on over here. Will you do this for my friends over here? And it was cool, man. It was a really cool opportunity. And as cool as some of those things are, you know, it doesn't even compare, man.
Right.
I think one of my greatest things that I love doing, even more than the magic, is when I get a chance to share a message, whether that's faith-based or whether that's in a school assembly. And you can, even in a school assembly, and you see a big old jock dude with tears rolling down his eyes, man. I'll never forget, I was at a university, a major university. This dude had a full ride. I mean, anybody who watches Big Ten football would know who this guy was. And I'll never forget this dude coming up to me and putting his arms around me, man, and just sobbing. He's like, you are so right, man, everything that you said. And he said, I thought about giving up on my life. He goes, you see all those guys over there and a whole bunch of big old dudes standing on the wall? He goes, well, they're all my football buddies, and they have no idea what's going on in my life. I lay my head on the pillow at night, and he goes, I just think about taking my life. And here's a guy, Trent, that, like, you look at him, you're like, man, he's a good-looking dude. He's just ripped. He's got TV exposure. He's got, you know, all of these things, you know, NFL's looking at this guy, you know, and just, and here's a guy that seems like on the outside has it all together. And yet there were some things just killing his world, right? Just the rug pulled out from under him. And so to me, yeah, entertaining a celebrity, it's fun and it's cool. But that's not my purpose in life, man. You know, it's a fun opportunity. It's a cool opportunity. But it doesn't even come close. And I'm telling you, I mean that with everything in me, to watching someone change their life around, someone that thought about giving up on life and then say, man, I want to live this life because of some words that came out of my mouth.
Yeah. It's the impact, and that totally makes sense. I get it. You don't have to say, Tom, but do you have a favorite trick or type of trick that you prefer to do typically that you'd prefer over the other? Or are you really just you enjoy really anything and everything when you perform?
Man, that's a great question. I do have a favorite. One of my favorites to perform is actually a fan favorite, that it's one of the most requested tricks that I get asked to perform. And here's the coolest thing about this. When it comes to magic tricks, they're expensive, man. It's an expensive hobby. It's because you're paying for the right to perform tricks sometimes and don't even get any props with it, and you're spending, you know, thousands of dollars just for the rights of a trick sometimes to be able to perform it. Because a lot of people don't realize David Copperfield, David Blaine, Chris Angel, all of these guys, Penn and Teller, a lot of times, man, we don't create our own tricks. There are masterminds behind the scenes, man, that are great creators of magic. And so we're buying the rights to these tricks from these guys. Now, that's not to say we've all had our, you know, certain illusions or things that we build or tricks that we come up with. But as a majority, man, magicians, I think there's a lot more smarter people than us that understand magic. Some of them are magicians themselves, so I guess they are pretty smart, and they, you know, but they're more creators. And this trick that I get asked to perform is something that it's all borrowed objects. So that's why I just explained what I did, because this thing cost me nothing, Trent. No money at all.
Those are the best.
Borrowed object from the crowd, and yet it is people's most favorite illusion that I do, and it blows my mind because I'm going, wait. Why not react to the illusion that I spent $5,000 for? You know, why not love that one more? You know, why the one that I'm borrowing a quarter from the crowd? I'm borrowing a Sharpie. You know, and I'm asking the school or whatever venue I'm at, I always ask them to supply me with a 12-pack of soda. And so in a box so that it's sealed or whatever. And I tell them to hand it to me right before the show so that, you know, I never tampered with it before the show. So everything is completely borrowed. And I call someone out of the crowd. I have them sign their initials on the quarter. And then I have someone come up. I turn this into a big funny routine. I have someone come up that's really strong, one of the strongest guys in the room. And they'll come up and they'll rip that 12-pack open. They fly all over the room, you know. And so they'll pick up one of the cans that they want by their choice. They pick it up and they make sure it's sealed and never been opened. And then I take that quarter and I slam the quarter into the bottom of the can and show my hands completely empty, hand the can to the person next to me, and they take that can and open it up and they pour it into the glass. And when they pour it into the glass, all the liquid's out, and I never touched the can from this point. And so the person that poured it out, they hand it to the strong guy, and the strong guy takes that can and he rips it open, and inside is
signed
quarter. Yeah, so it's a fun trick, man, that is, it's mind-boggling. I mean, it's one of those tricks, like I said, I didn't pay a dime for. And it's people's favorite trick, and I love performing it. It's one of those that I can't tell you, I mean, I have probably performed that trick about at least 1,500 times since I started doing it. Or more. I perform it all the time. And it's one of those tricks that, here's a funny little story. It's one of those tricks that sometimes I have to ask my wife, did I do the quarter in the can trick? After the show, I'll ask her. She's like, yeah, you did. And I'm like, I just don't remember. Because I compare it to, have you ever been driving down the road, and when you're driving down the road and like your mind is elsewhere for 15 minutes, or so, like, you've been driving the car. Scary thought, right?
It is.
You're driving the car, and yet your mind was elsewhere. You don't remember turning. You don't remember oncoming traffic. You don't remember anything. And that's how I get for that trick. It's become so remote. Like, I can probably almost do it in my sleep, you know? And with my eyes closed, my mind is elsewhere. I've done that trick so many times that I totally forget after the show if I've done that trick. I mean, that's happened a few times to me, just like driving a car, you know, and not remember. Pretty crazy.
Tom, how can people follow you? How can people support you?
Yeah, man, great question. I appreciate that. I the best way that they could do that, sorry, I'm out in my car, actually, out in my seat, sitting in the parking lot, because I don't get very good reception inside the building. So I came out here, and I had someone walk right up. Their face was like 2 feet from my window.
Oh,
like
creepy.
That was a little distracting. I thought they were about to say something to me. That was weird. How can people best get a hold of me? Go to destroyillusionstore.com. That's all about the school assembly website, because we want to destroy the illusions and lies people are believing. If they want to look at some of those T-shirts and things that we have, and it's in the beginning stages, so it's like, I don't have the shirts even the way that I want them, with the tags and the buy things, change things, our own tag and stuff on it. I mean, all those things are coming. You know, they take a lot longer than you always plan. And so they can go to buythingschangethings.com for that. I mean, I'm throwing all kinds of websites out here, but actually, if they go to tomcoverly.com, that takes you to everything. I mean, that's a link that'll take you to the faith-based stuff. That'll take you to the school stuff. That'll take you to T-shirts. I'm kind of take you all over the place. So, tomcoverly.com. But how can they best support? Thank you for asking that. As I said throughout the podcast, or earlier on, monthly donors is huge. And as I said, we don't always ask for that. We don't always depend on that. But it's one of those things that if we're going to reach some of these goals that I ultimately want to reach, I got to stop being afraid to ask that. And so you asked, and I actually just recently said, man, when people ask, usually I tell them other ways, like the buy things, change things, but I won't tell them, hey, just would you be willing to just donate? You know, because that would be huge. And I can guarantee and tell people that 100% of everything that people donate is going towards exactly what we talked about in this podcast, so that we can provide free school assemblies to those kids who are going through, or to schools going through a suicide crisis where they lost a student because they took their life and they say, Tom, we need an assembly. So if people could do that, they could go to our website there, you know, on Buy Things, Change Things, they can donate. HolyWowMinistries.com, they can donate. There's all kinds of avenues there. They can get a hold of us. They can send checks in. They can do it with a monthly thing via credit card. That's huge. Or even if they just want to do a one-time gift and say, man, here, we just want to bless this nonprofit ministry and what they're doing, that would be huge. They can get a hold of us that way. Thanks for asking that, because as I said, it's one of those things. In order to impact this world, we've hit 3 million students, but there's a lot more, and we got to keep going, you know, and that's even over a span of 11 years. So you think, wow, 3 million students, but those kids are all grown, you know, most of them now, right? Except for the ones that are presently we're hitting now. So that cycle of students is always there, because as they're growing up and going through the grades. And so the need is huge, and I can't do it alone. And so I'm not looking for people just to willing to say, man, here's money, let me donate. I'm looking for people that look at this and go, man, this is a partnership where I get to be able to hear some of these stories and things that are happening and be a part of it and feel a part of it, because it truly is not something I can do on my own. Trent, you were generous, you know, and many others like you who that see the need and believe in it. And it takes amount of trust, right, to say, man, I'm trusting my dollars to be able to go towards something that's going to impact our world. So thank you for that. Trust in me and our nonprofit to be able to say, man, this is a nonprofit that's making impact. And that's why we try. That's why it's important on social media. And, you know, those that are listening, they can follow us. All my social media is Tom Coverly Tour. So Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Tom Coverly Tour. They can go there. We're always posting videos and pictures of school assemblies and things like that, and different events, so they can see that we're on the road and we're busy and we're we're doing what we're talking about during this podcast.
Well, thank you so much, Tom, for the work that you're doing. It's greatly appreciated. The question that I always close with is, what is it that you want people to take away, whether it's from something we've talked about or not talked about today? What is it that you want people to take away from this podcast?
Yeah, let me address specifically those who are listening to the podcast ready to give up. And I know we talked about it a little bit during it, but there are people that are listening to the podcast, Trent, who it doesn't matter whether they are a teenager, college student, or adult. And they're ready to quit, man. They're ready to throw in the towel. Maybe they're ready to throw in the towel, not just on life. Maybe they're ready to throw in the towel on their marriage. Maybe they're ready to throw in the towel on just their job, just doing life. Maybe some, you know, feel like they just don't even want to live anymore. They just want to quit. They feel like their situation is never going to get better. They're believing all the lies and illusions that no one cares about them, that no one loves them, no one would miss them, that their situation's just not going to take a turn for the better. And I want to take just a few seconds here to tell them truth and reality. Truth and reality is this: you are loved. Truth and reality is there are people around you that love you, that care about you. Truth is there are people that would miss you if you were gone. And I know that because I've been in many schools where there's friends lined up. And they lost their friends because their friends took their lives. And these friends are going, man, if we only knew what was really going on in their life, maybe there's something we could have said. Maybe there's something we could have done. And these friends and family members that are just grieving because of the loss. And in most cases where people gave up, they gave up because you think no one's going to miss you. Because if we really realized how many people would miss us, right, we wouldn't even consider giving up. But we all get to that point sometimes, those that feel like giving up, that you think that no one would really care if you were gone. And that's a lie. And truth is, they would. Truth is, the person listening to this podcast, they have a purpose in this life. There are people that need them. You know, I never would have thought in a million years that my story would be something that would be used to help other people. There are things and the heartaches and pains that people listening to this podcast right now are going through that other people around them, even if they're not standing on a stage, they don't need to stand on a stage in front of thousands and millions of people to make a difference and impact. There are people in their communities, in their world, people they rub shoulders with every day because of the pain and heartaches they're going through. They need them, you know. And they can relate to people maybe that I can't relate to. And so they have a purpose in this life. And there's some of the reminders, man. I just want to tell people that as we leave and end this podcast, that they are loved, they have a purpose, and not to give up. Keep going. Keep your head up. Keep pushing forward. There's light at the end of the tunnel. There's bigger things ahead for them. The best is yet to come for them.
Tom, I thank you greatly for being on the podcast this week. One of the last things that I've started incorporating very recently is something a little fun, I think. I like to let my guests do the sign off of the podcast to take us out of the podcast. Would you like to do the sign off this week?
Yeah, anything specific you want said, or just end it the way I want to end it?
End it the way you want to end it.
All right. Well, I want to thank all the listeners for listening in on this podcast. I know it was a long one. Thank you for hanging in there through the journey, listening to Trent and I talk back and forth. Go out, make a difference, impact other people's lives, and thank you for listening. Peace out.